Fuel Stop Chats is recorded live over Zoom. Please check us out on Twitter and Instagram at Fuel Stop Chats. And also, if you're brave enough to want to watch us, check us out on our YouTube channel. Search Fuel Stop Chats for the show recordings and other additional videos. As always, like and subscribe. And if you have a show idea, feel free to reach out to us at fuelstopchats@gmail.com. Again, fuelstopchats@gmail.com. If you like our podcast, like and subscribe, throw us a rating, tell your friends, and let's grow the community. Thanks for listening. Key the intro.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Fuel Stop Chats. I was going to say good evening, but I don't know where you are or what the heck you're doing or what time of day it is, so I have no idea. But I will say this. We're pretty excited tonight to have the editor-in-chief from Roadrunner Magazine, Florian, and should I say it, Neuhauser.
Pronunciation, perfect.
Wir können ein bisschen Deutsch reden mit uns. We're really excited to have James shaking his head like, what are you talking about? Florian's with us tonight, and we've got a lot of stuff to talk about, man. I think everybody wants to know. I see you in different pictures in the magazine, in the editor's column, and it's, I think every other month that I get this, it's a different bike. So what do you ride?
Oh, it's, that's the hard choice. What do I ride? It always depends where am I going? And that's when I choose what bike to ride. But my main squeeze is still the 1190 Adventure. That's still my main ride. And we recently got the Triumph Scrambler 1200 XE that's here. And we have a brand new V-Strom 1050.
Nice.
That's the one I rode this weekend. And my mom still has her Ducati Scrambler. We still have a 99 Triumph Speed Triple that I ride sometimes. So fortunately, there's no shortage in motorcycles.
That's awesome. That's a great problem to have. I'm trying to add my fourth now. I'm trying to get an ADV bike, and I'm torn. I don't know where I'm going yet with that.
But, yeah, I heard Honda has an adventure scooter.
What?
Might as well. I love my scooters. We still have a Kymco that they won't take back, and I'm really, really seriously considering chopping that thing up and just making a battle scooter out of it.
That would be interesting and definitely worthy of another conversation on Fuel Stop Chats. And I got to have pictures, man. For me, the scooter scene is the Amalfi Coast. I could totally do the scooter thing there. I've done it in Paris, outside of that where somebody might see me, not so much.
Yeah, but we have to get past that,
The
very first scooter trip we did was family trip. My mom and my dad, my brother and I, we had two 500cc scooters and two 250cc scooters. And this was a tour we did in Kansas and Missouri. And I will never forget the look of these poor Harley riders that we passed on the highway going about 80 miles an hour waving at them. They did not see it coming. I don't think they enjoyed it. But if you ride scooters, you got to have fun with it.
Yeah, man, own it.
Yeah.
I'm with you. Own it all the way.
I wouldn't mind a Grom. I mean, even those little Groms, they're close to it. And I know that Honda's got the 125 and I think the 150 that they just came out with, the blue one. And it looks like the 75 that I had back in 74. So
yeah. Well, don't forget,
I would be open to those. It's not a scooter, but it's still no clutch in like three gears.
Yeah, it's the mini bike. And I always said, whenever the Grom came out, I said, this is a motorcycle you have to buy in pairs. Don't just go out and buy one, buy two, because as soon as you have one, your friend's going to ask you to ride it. And this way you already have two and you can start having parking lot races.
Do you remember Yvonne at Big Bend National Park when we left out of Austin and he had the NC700 Honda?
Yes.
He was kind of bummed when he got this thing as a replacement. The rental company just ran out of bikes, and the one that he was supposed to get was crashed. Mine was crashed. That's when I got the 650 GS, which I fell in love with that little bike. Yvonne got done with that bike 4 days later and said that is absolutely the most comfortable seat, bar none, that he'd ever sat on. Yeah. I was like, okay. All right. So Roadrunner Magazine, talk to me about how that got started.
Well, good old coming to America, American dream type story. The whole family moved from Austria in 1999. My parents were photographers, but my dad also had an advertising agency in Austria, and he started Moho, Motorcycle Hotels in the Alps. So he basically had all of the aspects covered minus the English language. So when we first moved to America, it was all about just photography, a lot of weddings, a lot of parties, a lot of portraits. But, you know, that's after a while, that's not very exciting. And my dad was a very enthusiastic person. So one day he noticed that there aren't a whole lot of motorcycle magazines on the shelf, especially like there were in Europe with lots of travel information and maps. So, I mean, nothing new, nothing that he invented himself, but saw that there was a hole in the market, and then, yeah, decided we should come up with our own motorcycle magazine. And somehow it got off the ground. And first year we had 3 issues, the next year 4 issues, and then 5, and then 6. And then a couple of years ago, we added the 7th issue per year too.
Fantastic. And from what I understand, it's a full family affair thing, right? Mom, dad, brother.
Yeah, everybody. It's my mom's the publisher. My brother is the technology consultant, and I'm editor-in-chief and marketing and a few other titles. But it's a small family business.
Well, it's fantastic. Yeah,
I mean, and one of the things that I really liked about the magazine, something I learned a while ago when I first started reading it, was a lot of the articles in there are actually from writers. They're writer submissions that go to you. I'm sure that cuts down on the staff of having to have people go out and do, you know, trips and write about it. But it gives it a different flavor because it's actual writers that are going out there. So it's average Joe on his bike, gets in front of a computer, puts a Word document together, sends it in with some pictures, and it could get chosen to be put in the magazine.
It could. I mean, I would say yes and no to that. It could get chosen, but we value photography. So that's why, yes, we do take reader submissions all the time. And that's how we have found all of our contributing editors we have now. That's because they sent something in a long time ago. And then you develop a working relationship, and then it goes. But very true. If I couldn't afford a staff of travel journalists that, you know, give me 6 travel stories per year. They would be very happy, but I would not be very happy. But that's why.
Sign me up for that one.
I wish to have a really big staff, and I can all send everybody around the world. Unfortunately, that's not how it works.
Hey, man, I'm cheap. A little gas, a little beef jerky. I can write.
Ice cream. You will get anything you ever want from that man with ice cream.
Yeah, ice cream and motorcycles, right? But yeah, like I said, it's all about the photography. You know, we have a link on our website for submissions. Send us a couple of photos and we go from there.
And James is going to insert the link for all you wannabe motorcycle.
Yeah, that'll all be on the YouTube channel. So for those listening and can't see it, it is what it is. Check out our YouTube and you'll have to look there. You'll get to see some pictures and some links and some other things, as well as the three of us talking in a Zoom call, looking enthusiastic as always.
Yeah, well, just to be fair though, bro, I am definitely a face for radio. So, you're not missing a thing listening to the podcast with me, man. No.
Exactly.
So I was looking at, I was looking at the article you had in there about the BMW Sport Tour and the Kawasaki. And it was interesting that it was those two. And I was like, man, what happened to FJRs? What happened to all these other bikes? And I was just sitting here thinking, how do you get your hands on all these bikes? I mean, I'm sure with Roadrunner that carries a lot of clout with people, but how do you guys go about selecting the bikes that you're going to write about?
Wow, loaded question. This particular comparison test was pitched by Kevin. Kevin Duke, in my opinion, is the best motorcycle journalist that's in North America. I mean, it's read through his last couple of tests, and you'll see that every test reads differently. You get the information about the motorcycle, and it's entertaining to read on top of it. I mean, really, yeah. It does not get better than Kevin. And we've always wanted to do comparison tests, but in the past, I wasn't ever 100% happy with the end result. It was too much text about this is the spec sheet on bike number one, and here's the spec sheet on bike number two. And it wasn't really all that enjoyable to read or informative, in my opinion. So that's why we did a few many years ago and haven't touched them since. And I mean, if you read the March-April issue and the comparison test, I mean, it's just so fun to read and you get so much out of it. And so you can definitely expect more comparison tests coming up.
Yeah, Kevin does a great job. You're right. And riding a bike isn't about the specs. I mean, we were just talking about a Grom. We were talking about an NC700. We were talking about scooters. It's about what moves you. It's about how you feel. And yeah. It's very hard to capture that in a comparison test, but he does a good job of it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he tells you the details and you understand the specs, but he you know, at the same time, he'll say, look, I don't know if it's a $6,000 difference in value, but there are some cool features that you don't get if that's something that you really want. And he definitely does a great job. I enjoy it. Just as one subscriber to the editor in chief, keep him coming.
Thank you. So, yeah, absolutely. And real quick note about the specs. If you followed the magazine the last couple of years, we used to have the full spec sheet at the end of every test.
Yeah.
And at some point, we made the decision that we only print now the most important specs because we're not a very technical magazine to begin with. And it's, I think, in my opinion, unnecessary to list all of the specs because that is something you can easily find online. If you're that interested in the motorcycle and the specs, you can look those up. But yeah. I'd much rather have more text and more photos than just, you know, the spec sheet that you can find online.
100% yeah, agree.
That's one of the things that gravitated me to the magazine. I mean, it says it on the front cover, Motorcycle Touring and Travel. It's a travel destination guide. So if I want to read specs, I'll pick up Cycle Magazine or one of the other ones, and it'll have a good readout and a good description of what the bike can and can't do, but there's no flavor in it. What I really like about the magazine that you have is I like going on a trip. I'll figure out if I want a motorcycle on my own by test driving it, feeling how it feels, renting it, taking it on a test run, but my passion is getting on a bike and disappearing for 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 days and trying to find routes that are going to get me to wherever I want to go and the different food that's going to be along the way and some of the different scenery and the points of interest and maybe some camping or a little log cabin somewhere. And those are the things that I've always really enjoyed within the magazine because it tells me about the bike. You know, I get a feel for if this guy's on an FJ and what it feels like that he's getting out of that ride going through the North Carolina mountains. But I also find out that, hey, he went to Smoky Mountain Campground and put up a fire and, you know, had a glass of bourbon after he had a pizza over in Silva, North Carolina. Those are the things that make that trip important. At least that is for me. And it's one of the finer things that I find in that magazine that keeps me coming back for it.
And the way we settled on this sport touring comparison test also has a little bit to do with, you know, the current interest in adventure motorcycles. Because, I mean, again, look back at the first couple of issues of Roadrunner. What do you see? You see a lot of adventure bikes. I mean, my dad brought over his Triumph Tiger from Austria, and that was in the magazine all the time. So this whole adventure or travel enduro, as we call it in Europe, the travel enduros, that was never new to, at least not new to me, because very early on, fortunately, we had those at home, those bikes, and I realized, okay, I can sit upright, I'm super comfortable, and this is by far the most exciting motorcycle in the curves. And then, yeah, the motorcycles just kept getting better and more powerful. And then all of a sudden, there's an adventure boom in America, and everybody wants a GS and an adventure. And yeah, and then it's
I think Charlie and Ewan helped with that.
Say what?
I said Charlie and Ewan helped with that too.
Yeah, and then it was just exploded. And then it's, again, I want variety in Roadrunner. We have a lot of different readers who ride different motorcycles. And yes, it's all about where you go, not necessarily what you ride, but I can't have a magazine that's all, you know, adventure bikes. And right now that's difficult because if you look around, it's just about every new motorcycle that comes out, at least to me, seems to be an adventure bike. So that's why, okay, so we have a lot of coverage on adventure bike already. I don't want to do a comparison test in this area. So let's do something, you know, sport touring, because that's still, you know, right up our alley. I love my sport touring bikes. I love both the RS and the Ninja 1000. So that's how we settled on those.
I tell you what, man, if you've ever lit out on a 1250 GS and you had the right tires, 60-40, I would say that's sport riding.
Yeah.
That thing is a beast on the street. I mean, it's crazy.
Oh, I know. And we also organized tours in Europe. And this was before all the bikes had traction control. It was always the funniest to see, because I was usually the sweeper, to see our tour group go up the switchbacks, especially the first day we did the switchbacks. And, you know, the couple that's, you know, a few bikes in front of me, I'm watching them hit that second or third switchback. And they're in first gear, two up on the GS, and he cracks that throttle and he wheelies that GS out of it. That's the funny. And it's not just once that this has happened. It's all funny.
So this is over in Stavilio Pass?
No, the way we run our tours, this is the one in Austria. It's called Anstrasse. And it's just really tight switchbacks. And that's
okay.
The first time we hit them. And it's just fun seeing, you know, a couple of 65 years old wheeling out of a switchback. It's fantastic. Makes my day every time.
Yeah, one of the things I like about the magazine is the variety. So you got the different types of bikes, but you also have Riding in America. And you always have one article in there of something from either South America or Europe. Where's your favorite place to ride? Because I'm sure that you've ridden down in South America. I know that you've ridden in Europe. And living in North Carolina, you've hit pretty much some of the good sweet spots of North Carolina, which I think has some of the best riding in the United States.
Difficult again, because every part of the world has something unique to offer. Just from a pure riding standpoint, just about the roads, the Appalachian Mountains, every time, hands down, almost year-round riding. So many roads to choose from, fantastic asphalt conditions, almost no traffic. It never gets boring. And then now on top of it, of course, you have all these gravel roads to choose from. It's different than, you know, Europe, absolutely beautiful, fun roads. Sometimes the roads can be a little bit slippery, even in dry conditions. So it's not always a racetrack, but a lot of traffic, a lot of tourism, which, you know, takes away a little bit from the riding. But the scenery makes up for it. The world-class hotels and the food and the drink make up for it. So it's different. And then same thing in South America. It's still mostly third world country, but just unique culture. It's different. It's exciting. Again, almost no traffic unless you get into a big city, which I absolutely love riding in a big city with just crazy traffic where everybody's trying to cut each other off and you get to bang on people's roof on the car. And it's fantastic. I absolutely love it. It's, you know, if I do this type of riding in America, I'd probably be in jail within a day. But hey, if you're in Peru and in Juliaca and people drive like that, might as well do as the locals do.
Come on down to Florida. You'll mix in just now, fine. Although sometimes they shoot at you if you tap on the roof too hard.
No.
No, it's the last time I rode a motorcycle through Florida, we came into Miami and we saw a Jeep on fire on the side of the road. So I don't know if I'm that keen on driving back into Florida.
I actually saw a car in Tampa on fire 2 days ago.
Yeah, see, there's something going on there.
I'm still cracking up about the Harley EV Daytona Bike Week sitting on the side of the road.
Flames. I saw that video.
The thing went up in smoke. I was like,
I saw smoke. I didn't see it go in flames, but I saw all the smoke and the fire department. Like, I don't know what to do with it. And that guy was just—he took the seat off the back. Did you see that? He lifted the seat up. I was like, yeah, that's gonna help. That's gonna solve every problem right there.
Not good press though, man. That thing floated around and went viral within hours.
No.
Of here's an you know, batteries go up in smoke. I mean, it happens.
Yeah, then they say no press or a bad press is what's the saying?
Any press is good press.
Any press is good press. That's the one, but I don't know about that one.
Says the editor in chief.
They could probably think, yeah, maybe we could have lived without this one.
That would be rough. So
have you ridden any battery bikes? Any electrics?
Just the Zero. And okay. Just last week I got bored again and I'm this close to buying a Zero, but keep talking myself out of it every time. Absolutely loved it the first time I rode it. I mean, it's quiet. It's relatively easy to maintain. But ever since the LiveWire came out, you know, Zero raised their prices too. So I'm not too happy about that, but it's coming. You know, give it another 5 or so years or maybe even less, and we'll probably all have one electric bike in the garage.
Yeah, buddy of mine has an electric dirt bike, and it was an interesting thing to ride fast. I couldn't believe the torque that was on that, and he was like, listen, it's got three settings. Just keep it on one. He goes, I've been on YouTube searching for somebody that has gone to three, and nobody will do it. So I left it on one. I hit the gas, and I was really surprised. But what was really unique was the surreal moment of riding a dirt bike through the woods and hearing twigs snap underneath the tires, and not hearing that brop, 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 because that's what I'm used to listening to with the KTM. It was just so quiet, but beautiful going through the mountains like that.
Yeah. So. And whenever we figure out the range even more, I mean, I think some of the Zeros already go 150, 180 in the right conditions. I mean, that's more than enough for a day ride. But again, these are day rides from home or from the hotel, and then you got to start charging again. But hey, one of our editors, John Flores, went coast to coast on the Zero. So it's all doable.
Everything's doable. It's a matter of patience. I mean, honestly, right? I just read a great article in Popular Mechanics about massless batteries. So I'm pretty excited about that. And I'm pretty excited about, the new glass batteries that are patented and should be coming out. There are a few out now, but, pretty excited about that too. So finally we'll be able to get the weight down. We'll be able to get the energy up and the repurposing. So, and the thing that's cool about the glass, they get better over time, which is uncharacteristic of a battery. So it's exciting. Good times to be thinking about EV stuff. The range has always been an issue for me. You get 58 miles a gallon on a bike, and it's like, what are you telling me? I can only go 160 miles, 170 miles. I mean, and we don't, you know, the infrastructure isn't there yet. It's coming. You know, I mean, we got smart. We had to decouple fueling and refueling from gas stations. Like, I can go to McDonald's and fuel up while I'm eating. I can go to Walmart while I'm shopping for some last minute, forgot a tent, something, camping, whatever, and plug in and charge a lot more places now than ever I could before. So I think that's going to crack, that's helping crack the code. And then, you know, there's a lot of apps out there that will show you, hey, here's the next place to charge. And, you know, so it's just like plotting any other route, a ride. I mean, so it's coming. I definitely like the instant on and the torque, but I still like the noise. I mean, I like the noise once in a while of an engine and the mechanical connection between me and the bike with that. I don't know. It goes back.
That's why I said it's, I'm sure somebody will, or we will all have one electric bike, but I don't think it'll be our main bike for a while.
Yeah.
Because I think people like the noise. We like the freedom. So we don't have to charge. We can just fuel up and keep going. Plus, I like shifting gears.
Same. I don't know what the deal is with these DCTs. And I'm just like, look, I want to change gears. Don't take that from me. Yeah.
It's always, you know, the more option, the better. Honda's made great strides. Their DCT is really, really good.
It's smooth.
It is smooth. And, you know, if it brings more people into riding motorcycles, then I'm all for it. Then, you know, I support everything that's on two and three wheels. I say, let's do it. It's if somebody wants it, let's do it.
I agree. I think the more people that get into riding, the more we see other things change, the more acceptance of the culture. I mean, I was looking at those BDR routes, and these are people that are letting you ride through their private property. These are people that are opening up their, you know, their property for you to cross. And all the BDR guys are like, hey, man, be courteous. Don't leave anything behind, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And I think the motorcycle community, for the most part, you know, we're keeping national parks alive. We're keeping BDR routes alive. And hopefully we keep that riding alive for a while. James, you had a bunch of questions. You've been relatively quiet. What kind of things?
I know you're an avid
writer. And yeah. I know that it's the English sentence structure. You have lots of words and the photography, but you have to have some burning questions for our guest.
Yeah, no, I do. So, and we had talked a little bit, you know, before about some of the things, but so the Roadrunner app, got it on my phone, playing around with it. You have the paid subscription for it, but you also have the free side. You know, what are some of the differences in the two?
Yeah, the Roadrunner Rides app, sponsored by Yamaha. No, the Roadrunner Rides app is it's a navigation app, and it already has all of our 600 plus tours from the magazine on it. So it's very easy to filter it out either by state or by type of tour. And then you just download the state map. Got to have that so you can do offline routing, and then just hit go. And when you first open up the app, trying to change that, but when you first open up the app, you don't have to create an account. You don't have to log in, but you can look at everything in the app. You can look at all the routes, even in great detail. But if you want to follow it with turn-by-turn directions, that's when you need an account and the premium app subscription. And there's a monthly option or the yearly option. And the yearly option has the 2-week free trial with it. So if I always encourage everybody, even if you don't like smartphone navigation, give it a try at least one tour, or, you know, have your Garmin here and your phone here, and then just see the difference and see which one you prefer.
Yeah. What I liked about it is I like some of the clover leaves that you guys put together in the magazine, and it has those in there. I mean, whatever you're seeing in the magazine, you can pull down the GPX files, or you could go into the app and it's already in there. But it has some of the restaurants too. It has some of the points of interest. It's all in there. And I found that pretty cool.
Yeah. And we keep fleshing it out too. When you first came out with the app in the magazine on our facts and information pages, we had a QR code that led you just to the app download page. And since the Gen Fit issue this year, every QR code that's on the map page leads you directly to this very specific tour.
Okay, nice.
Which makes it very useful. And starting with the Gen Fit issue, we also have a new cartographer. So maybe you've noticed that our maps look different. And we took the maps previously, they looked a little different, but they had ever so slightly, I don't want to say more detail, but more roads, road names on them. And now the new map, I think it's more useful because it's easier to see, even though there are less of the crossroads in there. But with the beauty of the app, if you want to know the exact detail of the map, just, you know, point your phone's camera on it and it'll open up the tour. And then you can just zoom in on the route and follow it and see exactly where it is.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. So, and I see that you have about 9,000 maps that have been downloaded since its inception. So that's a lot of people getting in there and playing around with it. So hopefully they're providing some good feedback on that.
Hopefully, you know, the number one complaint is always that it should be free. And yes, believe me, I also want to give away this app for free, but app development is not free
it's not cheap.
And cheap. So somebody has to, you know, earn their money here. There's a whole team behind it.
I know you want to say something, Chris. Look at you. You're leaning in.
The whole free thing drives me off the wall. So I liken it to the guy that said, hey, I want to get a bid on building a deck on the back of my house. Guy comes over and he says, okay, I can build you this deck for $2,800. The guy goes, $2,800? That's just outrageous. And the guy says, okay, well, you go buy the truck. You go buy the materials. Go get the saw. Spend 5-6 years learning how to do it. And then you absolutely could cut some corners. And the guy goes, okay. So he goes to the store, he shops for the saws, he shops for the hammers, he shops for the screw guns and the wood and the blah, 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 blah. And he comes to the conclusion that it'd be a whole lot cheaper and a whole lot faster if he just paid the $2,800 and got it done. So who am I to say that it should be free? You know, you get what you pay for. Your magazine isn't free. I don't mind paying for it. I find tremendous value in it. If you don't find value in it, that's fine. You can roll on down the road and keep using your Google Maps for free.
Yeah, you don't have to buy it, but if you'd like to, it's for sale.
Well, I think to the point, I mean, we talked about this early on, and I'm sitting here looking at the Hot Springs, Arkansas thing because I was remembering the James the Ride we did on the pig trail a few years back. Had someone, you know, if I had had a 4-page cloverleaf that I could cut out and say, hey, this is a killer stop for grabbing lunch. And this is a killer stop to grab a night, you know, rest. And here's a killer spot for some pie and ice cream. And, you know, cause all that stuff's in there.
Yeah.
And so I have no shame in picking that up and saying, somebody thought it was a great ride. Let's go check it out. I don't have to reinvent the wheel.
And no, because we spend so much time scouting out these tours. And yes, you know, do we always hit the best roads in the area? No, but there's always a thought behind our routes. You know, they have to be easy to follow for most people because nobody likes making a turn every 2 minutes. There's got to be interesting stops along the way. And, you know, same with there's got to be food along the, you know, halfway point or, you know, 75% of the route completed. You know, there are more things than just connecting the curviest or the most scenic roads together, you know, because that part's not difficult. I mean, I can sit in front of Google Maps and just stitch together the curviest roads, but is that going to be a really nice, enjoyable route? Maybe if it's just me, yeah. But if somebody else is trying to follow that route, probably not. If I have 10 people behind me, definitely not. It's you know, we think about before we put together a tour.
It's one of the, when you look at ridehistory.com and you look at our page, it's one of the things that I talk about that makes us different. You know, anybody could take you from point A to point B.
Yeah.
You know, but are they going to take you from point A to point B and tell you what happened in 1863 on July 2nd? Are they going to take you to a 1776 built restaurant that you wouldn't find otherwise? Are they going to know where that incredible picture, you know, comes from? You know, hey man, this is a photo op right here. You got to remember that. And that's what, you know, being a tour guide is all about. It's about making this balance of food and scenery and ride and, you know, the whole package. It's why we sit around and talk like we do at Fuel Stop Chats. I mean, that's.
And it's, you know, you say you use the word tour guide. And yes, I mean, you're a tour guide and also I am partly a tour guide. So the magazine is really an extension of being a tour guide. It's not just us, you know, throwing out some routes and some words. No, this is us being tour guides and giving the readers the information so you can follow them in the same way, making it enjoyable.
Yeah. So, and let's get into that. So we're going to take a quick commercial break. And then we'll be right back. And I want to dive into that a little bit more about getting into some tours, you know, with Blue Rim Tours and what you've got going on there and get into that. So
look at that, man. I'm going to talk about another tour company, huh?
Well, I know you are.
That's awesome. Nah, I'm digging it.
And that's what it's all about.
Florian's going to adopt me before this is all said and done. I got this working here.
That's because you're going to keep talking German to him.
Hey, it's the only time I get to practice.
Üben. Wenn man es nicht übt, dann verliert man es.
Ja, genau. All right, so we're going to take a little break.
We'll take a little break, and we'll be right back.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Learning history is something taught in school. Experiencing history is a right seldom exercised. Either experiencing the American Civil War by walking its battlefields and touching the soil where blood was shed, or experiencing musical history from the studios where the lyrical touchstone was created and recorded, the textile of history should be experienced firsthand. Participants in this journey should be riding a motorcycle from historical location to historical location so that the environment can wash through them in the open air. Ride History provides an intimate, educated, and personal experience guiding its riders through history on the freedom of two wheels. Check out www.ridehistory.com for available tours of the Gettysburg Battlefield, or ride through America's entry into the Industrial Revolution on the oil field tour, the Knox tour from Fort Ticonderoga to Boston, or the 8-day rhythm tour starting in Atlanta and hitting Nashville, Memphis, Muscle Shoals, Jackson, and New Orleans. Ride through American history at RideHistory.com. Roadrunner Magazine. What more can I say about it? We've been talking about it this whole show. It's a destination guide for traveling and motorcycling, touring and traveling. There is nothing better out there on the newsstands today. If you went out and you wanted to buy this thing, it's going to be $9.95 in the U.S. and Canada. Or if you put in and get a subscription, you can get a one-year subscription, which would be 6 issues. 1 year would be $29.95. If you do a two-year subscription, that's going to get 12 copies of this. That's going to be $47.95. Or do the three-year like me for $59.95. You will not regret it. Go to www.roadrunner.travel. That's www.roadrunner.travel/promo. Click on the subscribe button. You won't regret it. Fill out the order and wait for your copy to come. It comes out every 2 months, and the information in here is just worth its weight in gold. From motorcycle comparisons to routes that are out there to places that other people have traveled. You can get the GPX maps for free in the downloads, or you can get a hard copy map out of the magazine, put it in your tank bag, and take it for a trip. Roadrunner Magazine. Check out the app, Roadrunner Rides. Roadrunner is one word and rides. The icon is blue with like a helmet in it. Download it, check it out. There's some great maps in there. You have to download the state, then you can download the maps that are in there. Check out www.roadrunner.travel, and thanks for listening.
All right, welcome back, everybody. So as we left off before we took our little commercial break and some of the things that you had just heard about, one of the things that Mr. Florian does on his side gig, his side hustle, aside from selling dog beds under the underpass, he has something called Blue Rim Tours that he helps out with. Why don't you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. Blue Rim Tours, that's our organized tour company. Shortly after my parents started the magazine, my dad realized that, hey, we have a big audience here of motorcycle riders, and we're originally from Austria, and I need an excuse to go back every August and spend 2 to 4 weeks there and show the Roadrunner readers where I grew up riding, you know, that's perspective. So he came up with one organized tour, and it had different names in the beginning. It was called the Alps and Dolomites Tour. It was called the 4-Country Tour, and now it is the 5-Country Tour. And that's how it all started. And every year, you know, we kept adding more and more tours. And now I think we have probably about 9 tours, and they are mainly in Europe. That's you know, from Austria. That's where we specialize in. But we also have some US-based tours and one in Peru. That's where we like to go back to Peru as well. And it's it's a great way to share our passion. And yeah, it was always about getting like-minded people together and ride. And the best part about this is, and that I know several groups of riders that to this day are close friends because of a Blue Rim tour, and that's how they met. And that's by far the most satisfying for me, knowing that we were able to connect people and they keep it going and they meet up a few times per year and ride together and travel around America and even internationally together. Then I always tell myself, job well done.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was going to ask your dad's name because you were walking down through the names of the tours.
The different tour names?
Yeah, your dad's name is?
My dad's name was Christian.
So now you can't say the Christian tour because that would alienate some people.
No, I can't say the Christian tour. No, it was...
we could do the Chris tour, though.
The Alps and Dolomites tour, because it's pretty much the Central Alps and the Dolomites, the four-country tour, and then we made it the five-country tour. But don't ask me which the fifth country was, if it was Slovenia or Switzerland. I'm not entirely sure, but one or the other.
Yeah, I've been wanting to do a factory tour, BMW, KTM, Ducati, and it sounds pretty close. I was on the website you guys posted a couple years ago, reading your magazine. There was an ad for Blue Rim, and there was this, lo and behold, Battlefield tour that struck a chord with me because that's one of my tours.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, let me see what they're doing and where they're going. And started looking at the European tours. And I will tell you, I'm thinking about doing one in Alaska. And everybody's like, well, you know, you're paying for a tour guide. Why don't you just rent your own bike, do your own thing? I go, you know what? There are times I just want to get on a bike and go. I don't want to think about the route. I don't want to think of I just want to enjoy the ride. And so, you know, when somebody takes the hassle out of the tour, it makes me enjoy the tour even more. Like, I don't have to worry about whether I'm leading or sweeper. You know, you've got 10 other bikes that you're worried about. When you're on the tour, you got to worry about one, you know, the one you're on.
Exactly. And, there are always those riders that they can and want to do everything themselves. They get great pleasure in sitting down and planning for a year of where they want to go and what they want to do. And that's perfectly fine. But there are also a lot of riders that, you know, have a lot of fun by joining a group, meeting other people, and knowing that the tour guide and the company takes care of everything. And with very little effort, they get to see the best places and have a fantastic time. So it's, you know, there are always different kinds of people. It's, to each their own.
Yeah.
No, and that's one of the things, like when Chris and I will go on our fly-in rides with a bunch of the guys from work. So we're all in the IT industry and we'll have like a conference in Vegas. We'll fly out either a week early or we'll stay a week after the conference. But we know that we're going to be going to this conference 6 months in advance. Chris and I will talk to the other guys because there's usually about six of us about, you know, is there anything that anybody wants to see? And if not, then we sit down and Chris and I start figuring out the planning and we're, you know, putting the routes together. What are the roads going to look like? Trying to put it into some memory of, hey, remember this, you know, this type of building is going to be here. We got to take a right here. Looking for the food places, looking for the hotels, making sure that we're, you know, taking care of accommodations for everybody. And then we put it out to everybody. Hey, book your own rooms. It's already in a block. Just put your, you know, credit card down. And every time that we do it, everybody's like, man, that is so nice to just sort of show up, get on a bike and go and not have to worry about anything. It's just all taken care of. Personally, I love looking the roads up and learning and putting the maps together and finding the restaurants. So I'm fulfilling something internally in me in doing that. It sort of is a pain in the ass sometimes when you have a bunch of people that aren't really doing good road discipline or straggling behind and you have to go back and pick them up and bring them forward. But it's part of the gig, right? Yeah. So I don't really lose too much on that. I still really just enjoy the ride because now I get to see the fruits of my labor and the route that I put together.
Classic road captain. I mean, you know, you do it all. That's you get the enjoyment out of it. And, you know, it's, I'm in the same boat because, you know, I also like the planning and I like the leading and, you know, saying, well, this is where we're going to stop. So I am a terrible guest on somebody else's organized ride or ride.
That's my biggest fear.
It's I don't know if you want me on your tour because, yeah, I mean, I can just, I mean, I see that I'm wearing the Ecuador t-shirt and, I mean, I'm so sorry that Cord and Sylvain, they guided us through Ecuador and I was not an easy guest. I know this. I tried very hard to be an easy guest, but I know I wasn't.
I'll tell you what, I'll let you be road captain. Chris and I are looking at riding with some friends of ours because we had talked about in the Bryson City area. If you want to come out April 24th, let me know. You can come out and be road captain. We'll go out for a ride.
Well, that's soon. That's in 4 weeks.
That's next month, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I do love doing the route planning and trying to find that perfect hotel and trying to find that perfect place to eat. And, you know, I do find a lot of enjoyment out of that. And I know a lot of people that my cousin's done a couple of cross-country trips with me, and he said, man, I just get behind that white bike. I enjoy the scenery. When you stop for food, I stop for food. When you stop for bed, I'm stopping for bed. I just get to enjoy myself. And, you know, he asked me about it one time, and I said, I don't know if it's the nerd in me or what, but I definitely like looking up the roads. I definitely like doing some homework. I've got two pages now of barbecue places across America that I've collected so that any state that you're in, you can find a decent barbecue joint.
You should write an article on that. Just saying.
Yeah,
it's. I think North Carolina might have a barbecue place or two.
One or two. I think the guys in Texas say not, but
yeah. Texas. I think Kansas is big on
Missouri.
Missouri. Yeah, North Carolina, of course, but yeah, it's. Barbecue, yeah. I found need some barbecue.
Yeah, I think it's funny. Every time that we go on a ride, we know that day one, we're going to have barbecue. Day two, we're going to have Mexican. Day three, we're going to have pizza. And then day four is, it could go to an Italian restaurant. It could go back to barbecue. That's sort of like a free-for-all on that one. But those three meals are going to take place usually in that order.
Yeah. And talking about food, that's one thing, okay, since we talked about organized tours. In Europe, stopping for food, it's not difficult. It's wherever you are, you can find a beautiful restaurant with a beautiful outside sitting area.
Just an imbus stand.
It's super easy. In America, I still struggle because, I mean, we're on the back roads and go through little towns. And some of those towns have seen better days. And I'm always expecting, it's like, look at the view. And then there should be a restaurant right here, but there are not enough people and there's not enough business around. And same when you come through a little downtown, it's okay. There should be a coffee shop like right here in this one. This is where the coffee shop should be. And it's still difficult to find food. So the easiest to find in a lot of these little towns is always, doesn't matter what size it is, there's usually a Mexican restaurant. That's always an easy one to find. And then if you're really lucky, the mom and pop diner, they're more difficult to find nowadays, even, you know, from a couple of years ago. But I do like stopping at those. There's something special about stopping somewhere and then ordering a cheeseburger for $2. It's
the Julian Cafe in Julian, California. See, cinnamon roll French toast in the morning. Get the cowboy special for lunch. I mean, that place is off the charts, man. And Jim's in the middle of Kansas. I found this place. He's got a little diner outside of a big RV park. You would pass it right by if you didn't know what you were looking for. But luckily, a buddy of mine, Leon Hansen, that rides, he's a 1600 guy. So he's on the K1600 pages. And we've exchanged some windshields and become friends. And I had the good pleasure of staying the night with him and his wife. Hosted us for a night, you know, on one of our cross-country trips. And he told me about the place. And man, was he spot on with that place. I mean, and I write that stuff down because it's like, I may pass through here again, you know? And it's just the tips like that that you were talking about earlier. It's like, you know, when you do have a group of people and you do find that spot and they express their appreciation for it, you're like, okay, it's worth the time and effort that I put into building this tour. It's worth the time and effort to put this group of people together. And I still stay in touch with people that have been on our tours. And, you know, it's, so that's one of the best, to me, it's the community aspect of it. That's the best part of it.
Yeah. Because we ride, well, we ride to eat and well, probably eat to ride. And then we stop and then we talk motorcycles. That's the beauty of our sport here.
That's what we do.
That's a fuel stop chat right there. So when you're riding, are you in tune with the engine, listening to the RPMs, or do you listen to something in your helmet? Do you have some music going?
I cannot do music. Every time I listen to music, I get a speeding ticket. So I stopped doing that real quick. A few years ago, I finally installed a communicator. And at first, I was very selective of who I would talk to. And it was pretty much my wife or my mom or my brother. That's really the only people that I wanted to talk to while riding. And last year was the first time that it was my brother and then Caleb and Marissa. And we went on a dual sport ride. And all the four of us were connected and riding. And really, it took the fun level from here to off the charts here. It was so much fun. I'll definitely do that again. But, you know, just whatever pops in your mind, you can talk about whatever you want all day long.
Yep. And yeah, it reminds me of the time we were in Arizona. We were riding somewhere, and I'm talking to my wife through the Senna, and she's at home. I'm talking to her through my phone, and we're passing this copper mine, and I'm telling her about, you know, the copper mine that I'm looking at, and all of a sudden it beeps, and our friend Yvonne is like, "Hey, what's going on over here?" With his thick Croatian accent. My wife's like, "Who the hell is this?" And he's like, "Who the hell is this? Where'd you come from?" And I was like, "Hey, I'm talking to my wife on the phone." He goes, "Well, now I'm talking to your wife on the phone." It was just crazy that he had somehow bridged himself onto our phone conversation. And we rode around for about 45 minutes, the three of us talking. It was great.
That's funny. Yeah, it's I think Cardo had that feature a while ago where if you would drive by, you could tap into, you know, very easily tap into other people's helmets, which a little creepy, but still fun, a lot of fun.
Yeah, we talk to each other quite a bit on the rides. Usually we'll have 5, 6, 7 guys in between us. And James and I'll talk, you know, we were on a ride on a Blue Ridge Parkway, speaking of North Carolina. And this guy was riding along and all of a sudden a t-shirt flies by. And then we go a little further and some drawers fly by. I'm like, "Hey man, you're going to have to stop. This kid's losing all of his clothes." And they're just, you know, and so he finally got the kid waved down. We got stopped. And turned around, we go back, and there's this guy in a Mercedes convertible, and he's holding up this pair of drawers, and he goes, "Hey, you guys know it's not legal to litter." And the kid walks up, and he snatches the underwear, and he says, "You know it's not legal to steal my underwear either." Nice. And the guy goes, "That's a great point." He goes, "Okay, so I won't tell if you don't tell." Yeah, had a little laugh, and off we go. And I'm sure the guy in the Mercedes is chuckling about that for days. But we've had some great conversations. I do listen to music. I have a ride playlist that's definitely different than what maybe I'm listening to at home if I'm by myself relaxing. There's rules and criteria for what kind of music it is when I'm riding. But I definitely love to listen to music when I'm riding. I have – riding is such an aesthetic reaction anyway. And to me, music has always been – a very deep and emotional aesthetic thing. And now when I get to combine those two things together, it's pretty special. I can remember, you know, different parts of different roads and routes by the song. A song will come on and I'll go, "Oh, I remember riding, you know, XYZ highway and thinking about, you know, this song came on." And so I do listen to music a lot. In fact, I've told people I don't want to talk to you right now. You just interrupted Boston's More Than a Feeling. So, like, hang up and go away. I'll get back to you.
No, I've been listening to music and, you know, I'm concentrating so hard on writing. It's like, okay. Left side is the clutch. Right side is the brake. Okay. I got to shift. No, it's not that bad. No, but it's very rare that I have a quiet moment. So when I'm writing and it's just quiet, I come up with I come up with my best ideas when I ride a motorcycle. It's true. I'm not just saying that. It's when it's quiet and I have a couple of hours to myself to think and really, you know, flesh some ideas out. That's when I get my money ideas.
Yeah.
All right.
Now, the older
Hold on.
Okay.
He opened the door. He threw it out there. I have to ask, what motorcycle and what road were you on when the doggy bed idea came to your head?
The doggy bed idea. Okay. So many years ago, well, not that many years ago, but I decided to import about a container of high-end dog beds from Germany. And I tried to, you know, sell them in America. You know, that was going to be my side hustle. That was going to take me over the top. But no, that one, that idea came to me when I visited my uncle in Austria. And he had these Chesapeake Bay Retrievers. And they're all trained search and rescue dogs, beautiful, highly intelligent dogs. But they both had this this really minimalist looking leather dog bed. And I loved it. It looked so good. It didn't look like the, you know, nasty pillow laying on the floor. Because at the time, we did have a dog. And we did buy a new dog bed about every 3 months. Because the oil from a dog's hair just disintegrates fabric. And, well, the dog beds are, you know, they're like $30, $40. They're cheap crap. And after 3 months, whether it's the EPS liner or the balls, the EPS balls, the dog just lays on the wooden floor. So not much of a dog bed. And these dog beds I had, I mean, you know, leather, lasts forever, never smells bad. No liquid can get through, and memory foam at the top, supporting foam at the bottom. I mean, they were really, really nice. They were just very expensive. And I didn't have the time to really, you know, go after it and try to make some money slinging dog beds. But
ladies and gentlemen, that man knows his dog beds. Come on. Who else could describe something in that kind of detail? That was phenomenal. But no, you threw that great idea out there, always on your ride, always when it's quiet. And I was like, oh, I wonder what he was riding. Where was he on the bike when the doggy bed idea came? But it came from, which is really crazy, because Chesapeake Bay Retrievers, I live about an hour and a half north of the Chesapeake Bay. Well, I'm closer to that up here up north, but the actual good part, fishing part, about an hour and a half away from the Chesapeake Bay. And your uncle had the dogs in Austria.
Yeah. Yeah. Such beautiful and smart dogs. I mean, I watched him when he was doing some awesome training with them, just, you know, in the backyard and on walks. And then he showed me videos of where they did the exercises for avalanche search and rescue. And it was 2 years ago. They went to an actual call where a man went into the woods and didn't want to come out. So they had to go in there and find them. And, you know, my uncle's dog found him. And, you know, how exciting, you know,
that is cool.
You know, you train all this time and it's mostly mostly training. I mean, I think most people that train dogs, it's mostly for the training. And it's rare that you actually get to go somewhere and use it and then actually have a successful search. And yeah, that was pretty cool.
I grew up with, we quail hunted when I was a kid. My dad was an avid quail hunter and he raised and trained registered bird dogs. And there is nothing prettier than watching a pointer get on point on a covey of quail and a cold, crisp morning out in the fields. You know, it's just, there's something about it. Wow. That's a great conversation right there. I do have two questions, if we can shift gears kind of back to the magazine. And I kept it open here by my side so that I'd stay on track and not wander off too much. We want to promote Roadrunner magazine as much as we can, because it is a good class act, and it's worth your time and trouble to read it. I do want to know though, Florian, what do you find? It's a two-part question. Most enjoyable about putting out the magazine, and what do you find to be the most tedious or maybe not so fun? What would you say?
Well, the most enjoyable part is, you know, at the end you see a physical product that, you know, you helped create. And since we're a small team, knowing that, okay, that I didn't just do this one part of the magazine. No, it's pretty much everything. And that is very, very satisfying. And that's what keeps me going. It's probably also the same question of what's the most tedious part is, because there are so many moving parts to producing a magazine. It's not just the editorial with all the different writers and photographers, but it's also about the planning of all of the trips and what gear everybody wears, where we stay. And then, of course, you have the advertising sales side, the marketing side. You got to be on every social media channel that you can imagine under the sun right now. So you have your ad sales team and all the marketing proposals. You have newsstand distribution, and just a lot. It's a very, very big undertaking. It's sometimes it gets a little bit much.
When do you find time to, you know, kind of take a step back and enjoy some of these routes? Because I do know this, when I have documented a ride with the intent of publishing some article about it, or whether I've done the videography, or I've, you know, that takes hours of editing on my, you know, to do the videos and stuff. But, you know, one of the things that I have found is I almost have to do the ride once to write about it, and then I got to do it a second time to enjoy it. There are facets I certainly enjoy the first time through, no doubt. But, you know, reminding myself, oh my gosh, you didn't post that Instagram pic. And oh my gosh, did you record this? And oh man, did you write that restaurant name down? And oh man, you know, and I can just imagine if that was my livelihood, you know, you have to have a passion for it, no doubt.
Yeah. And I mean, and that's very, very true, because when we go out on a tour, or when our contributing editors go out on tour, they have to, you know, they have to be on it, because they don't have the luxury to write something twice. So they ride their tour every day. They have to, you know, keep track of, okay, I'm following the route. What am I going to write about? What am I taking photos of? You know, all those things you have to do all at once. And it's usually just one person on a tour. Sometimes we have you know, teams of two that makes the photography at least a little bit easier and quicker, but most of them do it by themselves. It's a very special skill. You have to be good at it. And a few years ago, we tried to say, okay, now everybody, while you do all that, also take video and then come back and then edited into a really nice, engaging and enthusiastic, you know, 5-minute video. Yeah, no, that didn't work. Even I tried it. This was right when everybody had a GoPro, and oh my God, I do not miss those days when I looked down on my handlebar and there was a radar detector and a GoPro and a Garmin and so many electronics sitting up there. I was like, no. And now I'm happy that it's just, you know, my smartphone for navigation. It's very, very tricky with the video.
I sort of smile when I see people post in Facebook, you know, what's your favorite GoPro to use? Where should I mount my video? And I'm thinking to myself, oh yeah, I've been there, done that. You're going to log 1,000 miles and, you know, 100 hours of video and never look at it again.
Exactly. And I was in the same boat. I took so many videos, and you come back to the office and like, yeah, I'm going to edit all this. And I don't have time, and nobody has time. And the video, it has to be really, if it's not professionally done, then it's not all that fun to watch. And I mean, we do have some videos out now professionally done by Cameron and Luke. And
yeah,
those are very,
the ones that you have that were linked in your website to the YouTube channel were fantastic, and the music that has perfect music that goes along with it, you know, the camaraderie between the people that are riding is really good. You know, especially when they're jumping off a bridge and it's 50 degrees out. I was like, "Bad, no." 20 years ago, maybe. Not here, not now.
No, but you know, that's one thing I also like to do. If the weather is right and it's hot at the end of the day, you know, just jump in a creek or in a lake or just jump in some water. It does not get more fun than this. I mean,
that's the Austrian in you.
Yeah, for me, that's okay. I'm living in the moment, you know.
Yeah.
I'm in nature. Let's go have some fun in the water.
Exactly.
Oh, man. When I was a kid growing up on a farm, you couldn't wait to take your sweaty hayseed covered jump in the water, jump in the creek, cool off, have a great time. And man, the incredible. I hear you. That's awesome. Is there anything about the, you know, kind of the magazine, the experience, the direction, the vision, anything that you feel like, you know, you just, man, I got to change this, or I really want to add this, or, you know, does that kind of get to you? Like sometimes, you know, you find people that are passionate, they're animals about putting out great quality product. And I find myself even doing documentation for work. Sometimes it's like, look, it's good enough. You just got to get away. It be done with it. You know, how do you manage the cutoff? I've done enough. It's good enough.
Yeah, well, that took us almost 10 years to figure out, because, you know, we were also in the mindset that we always have to do everything and always more and more and more. But fortunately, now we're very dedicated to the plan of let's focus on what we do well and then do it right. And that's the path we're going to stay on for a while. But yeah, of course, I mean, video, I would love to have a video aspect of everything that we do. I would love to have, you know, our own travel show on Netflix, of course, to reach even more people. And it's all about, and it's not all about the magazine. It's all about, you know, the life on two wheels or three wheels, but just getting out there and enjoying the road and meeting people, because, you know, I mean, the name of your podcast already says it, because every time I ride by myself and I stop somewhere for gas, it takes about 10 seconds until somebody walks up to me and says, where are you going and where are you coming from?
Every time.
Yep. I had a bike like that. I wish I was on my bike.
Yeah.
I didn't know BMW made motorcycles.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got that in West Virginia one time. And, I had a great experience. I always have great experiences. I tell people all the time, I could get in a car. I could drive from PA to California, never talk to a soul. I get on my bike. Every stop is a conversation. And I ran into a guy. It was in, I was riding to meet you guys, James. And I was heading toward Nashville, and we were going to leave Nashville. We were going to meet Nashville and ride out from there. I stopped at the biggest fraud ever committed by the government is that sign that says gas next exit, and it's 8 miles off the highway to go get gas when you're really in a hurry. Yeah. It's like, I want to find that guy.
Yeah.
And I want to tell him, put the dead gum 8 miles up there first. Then I can make a decision. Do I want to stop going 80 miles an hour and go do, or do I want to keep boogie until I can see a gas station?
You know, that really grinds my gears too, as Peter Griffin would say. No, absolutely. And as a matter of fact, I will not get off the highway or the interstate to get gas unless I see the gas station. I will not do it.
Same. So I did, and I got trapped. I got sucked into this mom and pop gas station. The fuel pumps were so old that they had taped a 2 in front of, to make the third digit, so that you could see the 89 on the pump clicking, you know, but the 2, they had to tape it up there. And I'm pumping gas, and I'm thinking to myself, the only thought going through my mind is this gas even any good? Like, what am I putting in my fuel tank? This is, I mean, like, do they sell a lot of premium gas here?
Like Baja, Mexico gas.
So anyway, and this guy walks up behind me, he says, hey man, I see your Pennsylvania plates. I said, yeah. And he goes, where are you headed? I said, so meeting some buddies in Nashville. I'm kind of pressed for time because I, you know, I told him I'd be there at a certain time and we've got other riders with us. And he didn't get the hint at all. Not at all. He says, so how long you been on the road? I said, I think about 6 hours now. He goes, how far you got to go? I said, well, how far is it to Nashville? And he goes, man, it's probably 4 hours. And I said, and you know, I got a ways to go. And he says, you know, my parents were in Pennsylvania once.
Yeah.
I said, no kidding. Where at? He said, up around Erie. He said, in fact, my mom said I was made in Erie. And he just walks away. I was like,
all right.
There's 10 minutes of my life I'll never get back. But I met a guy who was made in Erie.
You had that mental image.
It's a story. It's a story. But I don't know, man. I tell you, I can't substitute. And you know what's crazy about this whole two-wheel thing is the people that get it really get it. And people that don't really don't. Like my wife has, she's like, wait, so you're telling me that you're going to jump on your bike. You made this decision on a Tuesday to leave on Saturday to go to Seattle via the Angeles Crest Highway and the Pacific Coast Highway. I said, yeah. And she goes, I was looking at a map. She said, that's not anywhere close to Seattle. And I go, that's kind of the point. And I know she said, you've ridden the Pacific Coast Highway from Mexico to Canada. And I said, yep, I have, except for this one little piece up there in Washington. I need to finish that loop to where it says ends, right?
Yeah.
And she goes, is that big a deal? And I said, I know that there's a sign that says ends. I got to go get a picture with this sign. And Jerry happens to be needing to go to Seattle, so let's go. And she said, and you find that fun? And I was like, yeah. Yeah, I do. I find it fascinating. I mean, the trip and the whole experience, everything about it. Okay. Well, I'm going to go to the ocean with the girls. We're going to sit at the beach and we're going to hang out for a week or two while you're gone. I said, that's fantastic. So let me get this right. You think it's fun to go sit in the blazing sun on the beach and read a book? And she's like, yeah, absolutely love it. And I said, okay, this is where we're going to have to, this is why you go this way and I go this way. And we have her vacation, my vacation, and our vacation.
Yeah, and well played on that one. Well played.
Well, my dad taught me a good trick when I was getting married. He said, look, he goes, you need to go hunting for everything you can think of. Squirrel, rabbit, turkey, deer, elk, hunt it down. He goes, when you get married, she's going to complain. You hunt too much. You can offer to cut it in half and you'll find you're still hunting twice as much as you were before you got married. So I took the motorcycle riding and I just went on and on and on. You got to cut your motorcycle riding back. Okay. I promise I'll cut it in half. I'm still 19,000 miles a year. It's all good.
She's going to listen to this. Don't have her listen to the second half.
Not this episode. What number is this episode?
I don't know. 13. Exactly. Oh yeah. 13.
I don't know. We're going to go 12, 14, lucky 13. She's not going to listen to this.
Yeah. I'm okay with a number 13.
Lucky 13, man.
Okay. So we got about 5 minutes left.
Lucky 13. We said 8 weeks from now, we were going to tag up with him. What's the next lucky number?
I don't know. Math. Figure it out.
I don't know. Is it 21?
I'm actually not even thinking about it.
Yeah, 21, blackjack. It's a good number. Episode 21. It's Florian's blackjack. You win.
But before we leave, so we've got the April issue that's out. The next issue is coming out in another month and a half. What should we be looking for in that?
Well, the May June issue just went to the printer about a week and a half ago. We have the first look at the Pan America. Quite exciting, I must say. And the intro for that is in mid-April. So the full review will be in the July-August issue.
Is Kevin writing that up?
Kevin is doing that one, yeah. And
did you get a chance to write it?
Not yet, no. I'm actually very jealous on that one. But I believe, and it seems like Harley Davidson has a lot of these Pan Americas made already, because they announced the launch, the demo tour. I think they had some events for dealers already. They got to ride it.
Yep.
So it seems like they have a lot of these bikes going around. So, I mean, naturally already expressed interest for a long-term loaner. But I really hope Harley-Davidson nailed this. I think the industry needed this. I think they need it. And I hope it's a good bike. I really do.
Hey, man, on paper, it got my interest. I got to be honest. I was looking at a 790. Solid. I was looking at a 850. I'm looking at all these ADV bikes that a short guy can look at. And I got to reading the article about the Pan America, and I'm like, wait, this thing goes down to 30-inch seat height by itself when you stop?
Yeah, that adaptive seat height.
Right. It has more horsepower. It weighs less than the GS. I mean, it's like I said, on paper.
Yeah. And I am jealous that I don't get to go to the intro, because my whole joke was going to be to show up to the intro wearing chaps and a leather vest and then say, okay, let's go ride this Harley. Let's do it.
I tell you what, if you get some pictures of that,
please. Well, first of all, I would have to get the chaps and the leather vest. Well, I do have one leather vest. Every time I put it on, my wife says, don't wear that leather vest.
Everybody that's listening, we're going to start a Florian GoFundMe for some leather chaps.
No, please don't. I already have banana guards. No more chaps.
We'll mail them. And when the chaps show up, we're looking for the picture of you in the chaps, the vest. That's it.
A banana guards.
Okay, boots. We'll give you boots. And on your launch ride of the Pan America.
Chaps with fringe. I only do a leather fringe. It's got to have some.
Okay, there you go. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, you heard it here.
It's got to be John Bon Jovi, that shit up. That's what I'm saying.
That's right, because when my dad started riding in Austria, it was on a cruiser. And the leather jacket that he got naturally was,
big, long fringes.
All the way to armpit was leather. I mean, just the fringe. I mean, it was awesome. And unfortunately, it doesn't quite fit me, but that jacket is still hanging in Austria. And that's not going anywhere. That's a keepsake right there.
Damn straight. That's awesome.
All right. We need to end the call. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. We'll be in touch. We are definitely going to be talking to you. I really want to get updates on the different episode or the different publications you have coming out. And I mean, there's so much more that we want to learn about your favorite routes and all of that within North Carolina and elsewhere. So from there, I'm just going to say ride her out. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks, Florian.
Thanks for having me. And thanks for listening, everybody.
It was a great, great time spending time with you. It was great spending time with you. I hope we get to ride together soon, man.
Yeah, definitely. Let's do it. 4 weeks is coming up.
Don't forget.
I'll send a note.
All right, brother. We'll see you. Ride her out.
Ride her out.